This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsNap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
To you. Thanks for joining us. Yesterday, we broke the news, Tom Brady making it official that he is retiring from the National Football League. Of course, we'll talk a little bit about that now that it is done and in the books. But the big story yesterday was former Miami Dolphins head coach Brian Flores putting out a lawsuit against the league for its hiring practices against black head coaches and the lack thereof. He is accusing three teams of some impropriety. We're going to get into that lawsuit and what it means for him. He is 40 years old. He had had a successful run with Miami, given what Miami is and was. It was a team in 2019 that went 0-7 and looked like they were a terrible team. They turned it around. He started off 1-7 this year, started to move towards trying to make the postseason, sort of fell apart at the end. But his players play hard for him. They tend to enjoy him. And the Miami Dolphins firing him was actually a shocking move. Many of us thought that he would be hired immediately, that what he had done in Miami, given what Miami was trying to do with restructuring and getting rid of players and in a lot of cases trying to, you know, better themselves through the draft, but yet he still put out a competitive team, that he would be immediately hired after all of these teams started letting go of their coaches. He has not been. He has interviewed for a number of jobs, and yet he has not been picked up. And he is saying, I've gone on these interviews as a sham, as a Rooney Rule interview, so that these teams can avoid the scrutiny and hire other people, other white men for the job. There's only Mike Tomlin in the league right now, who's the only black head coach in this league. That has been a problem. The Rooney Rule was of their own creation because they noticed that over and over again, owners were not hiring minority candidates. They weren't even interviewing them. And this was a step to hire minority candidates, give them an opportunity to state their case and go to the interviews so that they could get jobs. And here we are in 2022. There's still a number of teams looking for a head coach. And Brian Flores may have sacrificed his coaching career so in the end, others may get a better shot at becoming head coaches in this league. We'll talk about the ramifications of this, what he is accusing teams of doing, and how much burden of proof is on his shoulders. And of course, later on the show, we'll get into the Tom Brady legacy and everything about the 22 years in the league that helped define one of the greatest athletes the country has ever seen. We'll talk about that as we continue. Your thoughts as well on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's, as we've got two major NFL stories to get to on a Wednesday on SportsMap Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. So yesterday we were on the show, and around third hour, I want to say a little after halfway through the third hour, it became official Tom Brady retired from the NFL. We learned it over the weekend. Adam Schefter and Jeff Darlington reported it. It didn't become official from Brady. Brady's camp said, what are you doing? He hasn't decided yet. And then on Tuesday morning, he released it on Instagram.
Just wanted to do it on his own terms.
Thanking everybody within the Buccaneers organization. And then saying that he was retired. And then later on in the day, the story was trumped by this incredible class action lawsuit that Brian Flores and his attorney are filing against the NFL for its racial hiring practices. And this is a big deal. This story is a gigantic deal. Because this is a young coach at 40 years old who has a lot of backing in this league in terms of his ability to coach. Yes, he's not the easiest guy to work with, and he's very tough, but his players play hard for him, and he's got their back, and they have his. And people on the Dolphins were very shocked that Brian Flores was let go. He turned the Dolphins organization around. It was basically tanking games in 2019, allegedly. And now they were a team that should have made the playoffs, that were in a position to be competitive last season. They started 1-7. They won seven straight and then lost to Tennessee, and that, you know, knocked them out of the postseason run. But Flores is putting his entire coaching career on the line with this lawsuit at 40 years old. He's not, you know, closing out a long storied career. He was one of the up and coming, young coaches that was ready to become a mega superstar in this league with the right organization. And many of us, as I said at the top of the hour, thought he was going to land on his feet immediately. I remember thinking as soon as he got fired, I was like, he is going to be on a plane somewhere right now to be interviewed.
Oh, definitely.
But he wasn't. He wasn't. He was brought in for interviews, and he's yet to be hired. Matt Eberflus got a job. I don't know who he is. He doesn't have any head coaching experience whatsoever. Nathaniel Hackett got a job. He's got no head coaching experience whatsoever. Josh McDaniels had a head coaching experience 12 years ago and blew up Denver, and he's getting another chance. Brian Flores is just coming off a good run in Miami, given what that team was and what he left it, and he can't get a job. Brian Daboll's never been a head coach. He's now been hired by the New York Giants. Brian Flores can't get a gig. He's not getting a gig.
Well,
he's being interviewed,
but
he can't get a job.
And the crazy thing was I seriously felt he was in the running for a couple of them and that he probably was going to get hired. I don't know now.
I don't know now either. And we'll get and here's why. First of all, the NFL is a very vindictive organization. They don't like this, and they're not messing around with this. Brian Flores probably sacrificed his career because of this lawsuit. And that is a sacrifice he's willing to make if he can better the path for future black head coaches in this league. The problem is I don't know if it will, because he's got three allegations here that are major that he's gonna have a hard time proving. Unless he's got evidence, unless his lawyer is sitting on real evidence for these three accusations that he's making. Otherwise, he's gonna have a hard time in court proving intent. But here are the three accusations against three teams. One, he claims that the Denver Broncos had an interview with him a couple of years ago in Providence, Rhode Island, hired Vic Fangio to be the new head coach of the team. That he went through a interview with the Broncos that was a sham. That John Elway and the other executives showed up disheveled and looked like they had been drinking the night before. There is no evidence of that statement other than that was the feeling that Brian Flores had when he was in the interview on that particular day before they hired Vic Fangio a couple of years ago, that they had been drinking the night. He does not know for sure, but that's what he felt. He felt that the interview was being done by the guys who were basically hungover. The second thing, and this is a little bit more complicated, but he believes that the New York Giants interviewed him as part of a Rooney Rule sort of obligation, because he had gotten a text message before he had even interviewed with the Giants congratulating him on getting the job by Bill Belichick, who later said, oops, I'm sorry, I misread that information. They're basically hiring Brian Daboll. So basically Bill Belichick got the wrong Brian, right? Sent the wrong Brian the congratulatory text. Flores was a little stunned by this, given that he hadn't even interviewed with the Giants yet. And apparently, according to this text, according to Belichick, the Giants had already hired their guy. The Giants had already made a decision on their guy. And that, again, would be a Rooney Rule obligation by the team to just get it done with so that they can comply, even though they're going to hire an assistant coach with no head coaching experience, a white assistant with no head coaching experience. So now he's made these two accusations that are going to be hard to prove. The Belichick thing could have just been Belichick saying, I got a feeling that Brian Daboll got the job. I thought he meant Brian Flores. Oops, I sent the wrong Brian the text, whatever. But if somehow they can prove that Belichick knew this and had information given to him, because Belichick is that tight in the league, that he knew Brian Daboll got the job. Maybe Brian Daboll even told him he had gotten the job. Whatever it may be, before Flores is interviewed, that is something that they may be able to prove. This next one is really serious. It's probably the most serious claim he's making in the lawsuit, because it could involve something criminal, and it also could involve an owner losing his team, and that is Stephen Ross of the Miami Dolphins. Flores and his attorney are claiming that Ross offered him $100,000 in the 2019 season for every loss. And that later on, Chris Greer, who did not get along with Brian Flores, and is one of the reasons Ross chose to fire Brian Flores, that Greer said that, quote, Steve was mad because Brian Flores was having success in winning games that particular season. Remember, the Dolphins picked fifth. They got Tua Tagovailoa. But Ross wanted the number one overall pick. Now, this is a really serious deal. One, it could be criminal in that it's a fraudulent business. It would be fraudulent business. You're basically conducting business in a fraudulent manner because you're selling tickets, you're enticing sponsors, you're the other tentacles that go on, you're not putting on a fair game, meaning that the game isn't square. If the owner of the Dolphins is wanting the coach to purposely throw a game and is offering money to purposely throw the game so that they wanted to make sure that the team would lose, that is a violation, again, of your business model and your business practice, and it's fraud. It's fraud on all the ticket holders. It's fraud on all the sponsors. It's fraud on all the league sponsors. It's a fraud on the league itself. And that allegation, if they can prove that allegation, could cost Stephen Ross the ownership of that team. Now, I don't know, because it's going to have to come from the other owners. But if I'm the other owners, this could be grounds for telling Stephen Ross he's got to get out of this league, that he has not earned a right to be in the fraternity of owners. You know, I've told you guys this many times. I mean, tanking does exist, but it exists in a different way, right? It exists in a way where maybe you cut players or you release players that are valuable to your organization. You trim payroll. Maybe you do things to your organization to say, look, we're not going to be competitive, and that's okay. But the idea of purposely losing games is something you want to stay away from because, again, of the legality of it. And in this case, Brian Flores, and by the way, can I make this very clear? $100,000 per loss for Brian Flores is not enough for Brian Flores to sacrifice his career for. Brian Flores, by winning games, is going to be making up that money down the road as a head coach in this league, right? I mean, look, you know, $100,000 per loss. I mean, what are you going to get? $1.6 million if you go 0-16 back in 2019? Is that enough when you can make millions and millions of being a successful head coach and proving that you can be a coach in this league? $1.6 million is not enough for a coach who's already in the system to be given, to be put into the category of an 0-16 football coach. You don't want that. But that being said, that's a major violation. That's a major, major rule. Now, look, one of the reasons why, if I'm an owner, I would be very angry at this is the whole protect the field mentality. I kind of use this example many, many times. You have an obligation to protect the field. You have an obligation as a team to put out the best product you possibly can in order to win a game. Now, again, if you want to talk about salary cap tanking, you want to talk about reducing payroll and reducing and getting rid of contracts, that's different. But putting the team in a position to purposely lose violates the trust that the league has with its public and with the other teams. You know, if I'm the Tennessee Titans, let's say, and I'm facing off against the Indianapolis Colts and I'm battling the Colts for the division and I want that division, right? Because the wild card back then was a little risky for me. I may not be as competitive in the wild card standings with other teams, but if I could just win the division, I can get into the playoffs. And the Dolphins are facing off against the Colts. And the Dolphins put out a team that is purposely going to lose the game, it ruins the integrity of what we're trying to do. The Colts get an automatic win because they played the Dolphins at a particular time. I'm not getting an automatic win, right? That's what you're trying to do. You have to protect the field. You have to put together a team out there and have all the players purposely try to win that game because, again, you have to put a competitive product out there. Even if in the end it's not as competitive on the field, at least everybody's trying. If this can be proven, this is a major situation for his lawsuit. But at the same time, that has nothing to do with the civil lawsuit that he's trying to get the league to comply with, right? He's trying to better the road for black assistant coaches to be coaches in this league. This will have nothing to do with that other than to show that it was kind of a toxic work environment, I guess, with the Dolphins. Would Stephen Ross have done this with a white coach? Possibly. It doesn't seem like he was trying to get – the purpose of it doesn't seem to be that Stephen Ross wanted Brian Flores to fail because he didn't like Brian Flores. It's that he wanted the first-round pick, and anybody who was going to be the head coach of that team was probably going to be asked this, if indeed this is true. But it's a major, major accusations, all three of them. I think the worst one, this is the worst one from a standpoint of the league would probably have to respond to this. The one, though, that I think he's going to have a hard time proving, and we'll get to this coming up next, is the situation with Denver. Because to make an accusation that you were there only to fulfill a Rooney Rule obligation and that it looked like the executives were drunk or recovering from drinking, that's a bold statement, and you better be able to back that up. All right, we'll talk about that. Also, we got to get to Brady again, making it official. He's retiring. So many of the accolades that are coming in for him. We'll talk about that as we continue. If you want to hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. Your thoughts on the Brian Flores lawsuit. Will it make a difference to a league where they don't seem to be all that interested in having people sue them for anything? All right, that's coming up as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
So again on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. Brian Flores is suing the NFL civil lawsuit against the hiring practices. Really? All right, so a lot of people are making the comparison that he is becoming like Colin Kaepernick. But here's the difference between Colin Kaepernick and Brian Flores. I honestly believe... And I'm not around Colin Kaepernick, and I'm not, we don't hang out in the same social circles, but this is just my feeling. I don't think Colin Kaepernick, when he started kneeling and started speaking out on, police, killing black people and whatnot, all of those issues, injustice that he wanted to stand up for. I don't think he thought that he would never play in the NFL again. Like, I don't think he thought, like, his career would be over and no one would ever give him a chance. I think Brian Flores knows that he probably is giving up his NFL career. He's not 100% sure. There might be a team going, you know what? Come on in. You know what? You can sue this team. You can sue the league. We don't care. But I think he understands that by suing the league, he's probably giving up his NFL career.
Yeah, he's coaching college. He knows that it's a risky move.
Right. And I don't think Colin Kaepernick thought that. I think Kaepernick thought he could do this and he could still play and people would still hire him for a job and then he could still make these comments. And I think it caught him off guard that he was out for like a year, 2 years, 3 years, and then permanently. I think for Flores, I think when he sat down with his lawyer, the thought process was, I am going to be sacrificing an NFL coaching career. I'll have to like college coaching if I ever want to do this, but I'm not coaching in this league ever again.
I think it probably dawned on Kaepernick when he decided to sue the NFL.
Yeah, when he did that. Yeah,
that was years later, right?
Yeah, that was years later. When you could make the argument when he did it years later that he was, all right, finally he reached a position where he wasn't as competitive as quarterbacks on the market. But at the time when he was like, why isn't he getting a job? And then you looked around the league and went, why are we inviting people to come out of retirement to play football? Like when Colin Kaepernick was still young and still athletic enough.
Hey, we still have that conversation now. And it's like, well, there's no chance of no one is going to hire Kaepernick because he hasn't thrown a ball.
No, he's done.
What, 5, 6, 7 years?
Yeah. So I think there was a period of time where Kaepernick was like, okay, wait, I did this thing. I lost my job. I thought I would keep my job. I didn't have my job. And now I'm suing the league. I think in this case, Flores was, I lost my job. I interviewed for jobs. It doesn't look like it's going my way. I'm going to sue the league and I'm going to sacrifice my job. So those are the two things. There is some similarities, obviously. Both are tackling the behemoth that is the NFL, and both are doing it in ways that are extremely public and will have their supporters. The one big question coming out of this is the effectiveness of the Rooney Rule. And the arguments are going to go both ways on this. One, is the Rooney Rule necessary? Is it effective? Do we still need it in the current hiring practice by this league? Remember, the Rooney Rule was enacted by the league because teams weren't interviewing minority candidates. They weren't. And so the argument at the time was interview a minority candidate every time you have a head coaching opportunity. Okay, why? Well, it allows minority candidates who would not be interviewed a chance to interview and a chance to state their case as to why they're going to get the job. Now, one of the more famous examples of the Rooney Rule working was Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, I will say this. Tomlin and the Steelers, it's a little bit more complicated than just the Steelers going, fine, we'll interview a minority candidate. Who's out there? Find me somebody. Anybody, anybody, anybody. Hey, how about that guy from Minnesota? Just bring him in, and we'll talk to him. The Steelers were interested in Tomlin. There had been a buzz about this young guy out of Minnesota and who was making a few waves, and people were genuinely excited about his future. The Steelers were genuinely interested in him, so it's a little bit more complicated. Did they bring him in to satisfy the Rooney Rule? That was named after the owner, one of the owners of the Steelers. Of course, absolutely. But there's a belief, and maybe this is just Monday morning quarterbacking it by some people. There was a belief that Tomlin would have been interviewed regardless of whether a Rooney Rule was in place or not. We'll never know that for sure. It's easier to say that after the fact. But the story pretty much goes, they were interested in a couple of candidates, one including Russ Grimm. They were interested in Tomlin, who was like 35 at the time, 34, I think. Really young guy. But they brought him in. Again, they had heard good things about him, and he blew them away, so much so that they basically made him a big name when he wasn't a big name. He went from pretty much nobody in the league to now the head coach of one of the more iconic franchises the league has had, and was going on a list of, we've had three coaches in the last, 60 years, right? Like he was becoming
still
one
crazy
of those,
to think about.
Really crazy. probably, like we've had, Chuck Knoll forever, Bill Cowher forever, and now you. And so Tomlin became, like an elevated name. Incredible, right? Was that because of the Rooney Rule? Well, yeah, yes and no, I guess, if depending on who you believe. But the one of the problems, I think Lewis Riddick said this best. You can rip the Rooney Rule because of what Brian Flores is saying, which is, hey, I'm wasting my time. If you want to hire Brian Daboll, New York Giants, you're wasting my time. I've been a head coach in the league. I don't need practice on how to interview for a head coaching job. I was a head coach. You either want to talk to me or you don't want to talk to me.
It's like if you're going to have someone like George Clooney audition, in a way, because you already know what George Clooney is capable of doing. So if you want him for the role, you let's hire him for the role.
So Flores is like, I've been a coach in this league for a number of years, right? I was, he was there for what, 3 years down in Miami?
Yeah.
I was a coach for 3 years. I don't need a practice interview. So you either want to talk to me for real or you don't. If you don't waste my time. And I think Flores, I can see Flores going, you want to use me as a Rooney Rule obligation? Like, we have a whole bunch of assistant coaches in this league that are black, and you want to use me? You're going to waste my time when other kids in this league should have an opportunity to talk to you about their qualifications, about what they've done? The young kids that are 32, 33, 34 that are making noise in this league? Where's Eric Bieniemy? Right? Where's Byron Leftwich? These guys who are looking for their first head coaching job. And I can see Flores going, why are you wasting my time on this? And why are you wasting anybody else's time on this? But the reality is, and this is what Lewis Riddick said, which is, look, if you don't have the Rooney Rule, these leagues never will interview black candidates. Now, maybe some will. But he's like, you don't even put it on them to do it. And here's the other thing I think the Rooney Rule does. And I think the Rooney Rule is important because, A, it opens the opportunity for a Mike Tomlin to blow you away in an interview. But I think, two, it also, because we love the NFL so much and we follow everything NFL teams are doing, that once you have a minority candidate that is getting interviews, whether it's Rooney Rule obligation or not, that individual's name starts to get elevated in the mind of the public. Right. If you take a Mike Tomlin would be a perfect example of this. Many people didn't know who he was. Right. He was like a linebackers coach with the Vikings. But let's say Tomlin not only interviewed with the Steelers, but he interviewed with three other teams that year. All of a sudden, you have a number of fan bases going, oh, and they interviewed this guy from Minnesota named Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin is a name all of a sudden you start to get to know, and you start to go, oh, Eric Bieniemy, a lot of people kind of knew him. He was the coordinator of the 49ers, of the Chiefs, but maybe you don't know follow coordinators, but all of a sudden Bieniemy's being interviewed all over the NFL. His name is elevated.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. Happy Wednesday to you. Midweek, going into the weekend with the NHL All-Star Game. There's a NASCAR race, like an exhibition race at the LA Coliseum. I'm trying to think of the other sporting events this weekend. Oh, don't the Winter Olympics
start tomorrow?
Do they start tomorrow? Beijing?
Yeah. Yikes. It's kind of weird because you actually will watch live events on Thursday, and then the opening ceremonies are on Friday.
Yeah, I think the Summer Games does this too. They have to start certain events early.
Yeah,
And then they have the opening ceremonies. So
then there's Beijing, that little dangling carrot out there that it might not happen at all. COVID.
And then there's the Pro Bowl, and that's about it this weekend. So enjoy your time
for
Super Bowl 56. The following week.
Isn't the Senior Bowl this weekend, too?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That is. It's also National Signing Day today. Don't you think National Signing Day?
How many of those do they have?
They have two big ones. They have the early one and then this one.
I feel like every week we have a National Signing Day.
This is supposed to be the big one. Like, the first one is like early signing period, and then this is supposed to be the big one where everybody's locked in. But I wondered, I was thinking about this yesterday when I heard yet another person on local radio here in Nashville make a big deal at a National Signing Day. And I thought, is it a big deal anymore? Like with the players with transfer portal and they're moving teams and like, you know what? I don't really like it here. I thought I would. Bye. I'm going to be playing next year for that school. Like is it used to be you lock these players in and the chips were all in the school's favor to prevent that kid from playing anywhere else. Oh, you want to get out of here? Great. You have to sit out of here. Oh, and you know what? We can limit you. We may not allow you to transfer to another SEC program or a Big Ten program or whatever it is. There used to be those like rules in place. So it's like, well, you can transfer as long as you go to, I don't know, California. But now you can't do that. You can't do any of that. There's no restrictions at all. They don't even have to release you. You can just go, bye, I'm leaving. And by the way, I'm leaving for your rival, so see ya. And I wonder if National Signing Day has the same level of importance. I mean, I guess it is. I mean, if you like next year when Arch Manning is going to be the big one, I guess that's going to be a big deal, even though Arch Manning could play for, you know, three teams in his college career for all I know. So I guess that would be a big deal. But
and I guess the other end of it, too, is just, okay, what kind of NIL deal is he getting?
Yeah,
that I think we're going to be more curious about that. Like, you know, I mean, we're already here in Texas. A&M had the best recruiting class this year, you know, quote unquote on paper, and it was because they just threw out all the money to land some of these guys.
You want to read a good story about signing day? And this is old. This is like, I don't know, 12 to 15 years old. This story, but you probably know about it. There was this kid in Nevada who. He was an offensive lineman for the school in Reno, outside Reno. And he was like a typical kid. He wanted attention and he wasn't getting enough attention. And he made up a story about being recruited by a number of different schools. And, you know, it's one of those stories where you tell a little lie and then, you know, it becomes a big lie. And then you feel like you can't tell the truth because the lie grew too big. So he was telling a bunch of his friends that he was getting recruited by Cal and Oregon and, you know, the players just maybe showing off, maybe press a girl or something. Who knows? But the story started getting momentum, and then the school got into it. Coaches got into it, and he kept this story up. And it was only because he had gotten some letters. Like, you know, these schools canvass high schools, and they just send general letters out to high school football players. And he kind of went, well, this looks like they're interested, but they're not really interested, but I can use this to my advantage. So the story got out of hand, and next thing you know, before you know it, he's in a big assembly, and he's choosing between Cal and Oregon, and the television crews are there, and the whole student body is there, his parents and coaches are there, and everyone is like, no one can believe it. He's like, he's not even that good. He's not even that. Why?
He's going to go play for a Big 12 school, and he picked up the Cal hat, and he put the Cal hat on, and then he said in the interviews, yeah, me and Jeff Tedford got along really well, and I felt like that was a place for me to grow, and I really liked their facilities. He had never been to the facilities. Like, it just got out of hand. It's obviously this a lie like this eventually is getting exposed, and it did. Nevada, for example, the Wolf Pack, their coaching staff nearly choked on dinner one night. He was watching TV and he saw this, and this was a school down the road. And he's like, oh my God, I just lost. He was responsible for the recruiting of that particular area. He said, oh my God, I lost a lineman to Cal. I didn't even know, like, all my grades for these kids. No one, not one was. So naturally it got people's attention. And when it was all said and done and it was over and he had to tell the truth, and he said, you know, I just saw these things on TV and I liked it. You know, I was like, I just thought it was cool and I wanted to be a part of it. He just got caught up in wanting that kind of attention. It was a really, really good story, though. He went on to junior college. He played some ball at junior college, ended up going to like a D2 school, did pretty good, got an education, played college football, you know, made up for his sins, if you will. But in the end, it was all because we give too much attention to National Signing Day. And he just wanted to be a part of it. How could you not if you're a high school kid, right? That looks kind of cool. Like the whole school is shutting down for you. That's kind of neat. Have an assembly in your honor. You got the cheerleaders there. You got the school, old student body, all the teachers. You're signing a letter of intent to play SEC football for a major university. Maybe it's an in-state school, and everybody's freaking out because you might help them win a national championship. It's kind of sexy, right, for a kid to be a part of that.
I always wonder, what do you think the thought process was?
Of
you know, I mean, did you think that if he says he's going to this school, that they're going to...
Yeah.
They're going to be like, you know, like, hey, yeah. You're right. We should have paid more attention to you. Come on down.
Right, exactly. Like, you know, you know, it reminds me of Millie Vanilli Behind the Music. Remember that one? Remember they were like, they got to the Grammys and they go, we didn't want to win the Grammy. We knew if we won the Grammy, you know, the clock was ticking.
It was all over.
He goes, then we won the Grammy. And sure enough, they were right. They won the Grammy. The spotlight's on them. And all of a sudden, people started realizing those two guys couldn't sing. I think that was the case with this kid. I think this kid was like, oh, no. I might as well go through with this. You know, it's again.
Can't stop now.
Can't fake a stroke at a party. You got to get the ambulance all the way to the hospital. Right? Once the ambulance comes, you got to follow through with that. So I always tell my kids, you tell a lie. You got to bail out of it early because you might have to stay committed to it. You don't want to stay committed to it. See, when they had the assembly and they threw out the hats, he was probably like, okay, this went too far. Oh, no. What am I going to do? They're going
to
catch me.
Look at me.
The other thing was, here was the other thing. It was such a funny story because it was an in-depth article that was written about this. And the teachers were to blame, too, because nobody stopped the process. Nobody. The football coach knew he couldn't play Pac-12 football. He didn't say a thing, right? The media didn't follow up with anybody at Cal or local media, you know, your local small town, television station. They didn't even check with Nevada as to like, why isn't he on your team? They didn't check with any coaches, anybody else to see if this kid could play at that level. The other thing was the teachers even said afterwards, he's not a good student. He's a C student at best. And he got into Cal. Like even Cal, they make obviously concessions for football players. They don't make those many concessions for football players. You have to somewhat get into Cal to play there, and they didn't say a word either. Right? Everybody just wanted this to be true so bad, you know, that they went, all right, let's just go along with it to the end. So nevertheless, so National Signing Day today, but it's a whole new world. Lane Kiffin said that. Now with NIL, college teams are on a salary cap. I don't think that's the right choice of word. It doesn't seem like there's a cap at all.
Not at all.
Like, I think you want to choose a different terminology. There's no cap at all. You can pay a kid $100 million if you want to do that.
I was about to say, was Texas A&M's salary cap $500 million?
Right. Like,
they just kept throwing out money over and over and over again.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, and you
know, I get what he's saying. I understand the he's trying to say, hey, we're living in an economic world now where this has to be thrown into the equation. But salary cap is like, hey, we get to tighten everything down. Like, we get to limit people's access to money.
And maybe that's the next step. Maybe the next step is having, like, bylaws of, you know, a recruit can't be offered X amount of dollars.
I'm very curious about that because I thought about that. I don't think you do that because the only reason we got this in the first place is because it went to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
I think the moment a kid goes, wait, you're telling me I can't get this $1 million from, you know, Bob's Barbecue? Why? And they go, well, because you're not allowed to. Why?
I'm 18.
They can't give you.
It's like, you know, I mean, if he won the lottery.
Right.
I mean, that'll be the defense. So like, if I won the lottery, you mean I can't take the money?
Right, exactly. And remember, the schools aren't paying the kids.
Right.
Right? So this is not taxpayer money.
But then it's weird because
this isn't any of that stuff. This is a business going, yeah, we love the starting quarterback, and we've got the best fried chicken and okra in town, and we want him to promote it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's weird because Grambling State is working on a program where all their players will be paid.
Well, that might work because I think Grambling's a private school, so I think the private schools can do that. I think the problem comes is if you're getting tax money from the state, you know.
If that's the case, Vanderbilt, all eyes are on you. You should not be the doormat of the SEC anymore.
Exactly. Harvard, if you want to bump up your athletic program, I think there's a couple of billion stashed away somewhere for that school. Give me a break. All right. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N. So, again, National Signing Day today. We will get to more on Brian Flores' lawsuit. Of course, Tom Brady retiring and the ramifications of that. For a league that, again, my son is a sophomore in college. He knows no life other than Tom Brady being in the NFL. He was born the year Tom Brady was becoming a star, winning a Super Bowl. He is in college when he retires. It's an incredible long career. Incredible. Some of the teams that he has damaged almost permanently because of what he did in 22 years is remarkable. As we continue, it's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue this Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. This hour of Wake Up Call brought to you by Rocket Mortgage, home loan options for your family. Rocket can. All right, so Tom Brady making it official yesterday. He's done. You know, I have to say, to go over Brady's accomplishments is silly. I mean, we all kind of know him. It's 7 Super Bowls, 10, you know, all of those things. 22-year career. It is mind-boggling. But you know what? I was trying to think about this. Is that the sustained excellence that he had really is what sets him apart from other athletes that we put him with, right? He's the best quarterback to have ever played, but he's not on the level of, like, when you go, well, here are the best NFL players. He's like the Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky level of athlete. He's not amongst peers in his own group. But when you think about Gretzky, for example, all of his Stanley Cups were done in a period of time in the 80s with the Edmonton Oilers. And then after that, that was it. He went to a Stanley Cup final with the LA Kings in 92, but that was it. He never won one with the Blues. He didn't win one with the Rangers. He didn't win one with the Kings. He had his big moment through the 80s, winning all the cups that they won. I think they won 4. And then that was it. And then in 88, summer of 88, he got traded to the Kings. That was it. And I think Edmonton won a cup or two after that. But Michael Jordan won 6 in 8 years. And that was it. That was all. That was it.
And did nothing with the Wizards.
Did nothing with the Wizards.
It's almost like you want to erase that.
Think about all of the different teams Tom Brady has won Super Bowls with. Right? He didn't just have Gronk for 22 years. He didn't have anybody for 22 years. Mm-hmm. He had nobody. He had no consistent teammate for all 7 of his wins and 10 appearances. He took different style of teams to the Super Bowl. He made stars of different players. A roster that changed over all the time. Different players that would come and go. He had a perfect season with Randy Moss and won a Super Bowl with Wes Welker. Right? I mean, like, he was a quarterback that was always in relevancy, right? He was always good. He was always the team you had to beat. And some teams did. Some teams did beat them. But he was always in the story, right? You go from the moment he emerged on the scene, taking over for Drew Bledsoe, till the end, to that NFC divisional loss to the Rams, he was always relevant. Always. He didn't disappear. And here was the other thing, too. A lot of those teams that other players like end their career on, Johnny Unitas playing for the Chargers, Bobby Orr playing for the Blackhawks, right? Whatever. Like Michael Jordan playing for the Wizards, Wayne Gretzky playing for a couple of other teams other than the Oilers and the Kings. The reality of it is that his one moment or 2 years of playing with the Buccaneers are extremely memorable. Like he won a title there. He won a title the second he got there. Right? He kept doing what he does. He did it there. He had an MVP-like season this year. He gave them two outstanding seasons at quarterback and then left. He didn't wrap it up, finishing it up, sign him on as a circus act to sell tickets. He went, do you want my services? Because if I give you my services, it'll be championship-level football. And that's what he gave Tampa Bay for two seasons that he was there. Unlike other athletes who go to a place to continue a career but can't bring any of the juice that made them who they were. Tom Brady never lost who he was. He was relevant and important for 22 years without one dip. Even the year that he was hurt and was out for the entire season, that was still talked about.